Industry Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Wenches, welcome to episode 275 of No Borders, No Race. I am your king, baby duck, Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. And folks, this is our 15th anniversary. 15 years of doing New Borders, No Race. Holy fucking shit. I can't believe that we have been able to accomplish this. And you know what? For a very special celebration, I am not alone, because joining me right here are a couple of original No Borders, No Race co-hosts, as well as a very good friend to the program. First and foremost, I need to introduce this guy. He was the backbone of the original radio show of No Borders, No Race. He gave me the courage. He always gave the aggravation. He was truly one of a kind. He is still one of a kind. I am happy to welcome back for the first time in almost 8 years, Blonic.
Yeah. I'm extra special.
And next up right here, he joined our show only for a year, 2007, but it was a good year, a good fun year. We were in the same anime club. Back then he was in a little band called Sweet Irony, and now he is the drummer of a band called The Stampede, which you hear every single episode because we opened the show with the SS Shitstorm, Mr. Chris Talen.
Thank you, sir.
Lastly, the other founding member of the Stampede. Oh my God, this dude has been the ultimate concert buddy. Almost every show I go to, I know that he's there, or sometimes it's just fucking out of the blue he's there. But holy crap, this is one of the coolest people that Chris has introduced me to, and our friendship has lasted almost 15 years as well. Mr. Manny Govega.
Howdy, it's nice to have Evan at those shows, because I sure as hell don't remember most of them.
So yes, 15 years of No Borders, No Race. But of course, first off, I wanted to ask you guys, how has been your lockdown? Because it's been a year since everything's been shut down, but everything's now coming back here in the Boston area. Yeah, your lockdown.
Gosh, damn it.
Let's see. Children.
More or less, it's been just an absolute shit show. It's just, it was like, it got to the point where you're like, oh man, so we're not going to do the 4th of July party? Wait a second. So what are we doing? So every day it was just, you didn't know what the hell you were doing next. Except for, well, I knew I had to work. Work was basically the only thing that I kept having to do. Everybody else I know was like, oh no, I'm out of work. I'm like, fuck you. You're lucky. I'm like, I wish I could just not have to worry about going to work, or just work remotely. Like, I worked remotely for like maybe a month and a half, and then my overlords were like, get back to work. And they were like, why are we going to go back to work? We're able to work remotely, you fucking idiots. This is saving electricity bill at work, you dumbasses.
We can sell the building off to hookers.
Wait, yeah. Is the curve flattened? No. So why are we going back?
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, I have to waste my gas going from you know, like 30 minutes away just to get to work, just to sit there and then deal with what? No patients coming in to get set up? Fuck you. I'm not going to go too far into my work. I don't need them to fucking tag me for this. Whatever.
Legalities.
But no, I mean, it was one of those things where it was like, you tried to figure out ways to keep things entertaining, you know, especially because, like, I got the kids. So, the worst part about it was my wife got pregnant. So we'll just call her Magenta. Magenta got pregnant prior to this. So it was like 2019. We finally, like, you know, like December, we announced to the family. Then it was like, surprise, pandemic. It fucking sucked. It was the fucking worst. There was like, it got to the point where, like, you know, 7 months in, we're like, are they even going to let me into the hospital? Like, they got to that point where, like, she's going to do this shit alone? Are you going to, are you fucking kidding me? You know, like, oh my God. It was just really bad.
Yeah, man, that was the same story with a buddy of mine. It was the same thing, having a baby. I honestly, I can't even remember if he was able to be in there for it or not.
Yeah, no, I don't get it. It just was like, it just was not fun whatsoever. The whole time dealing with the pandemic was a lot of bullshit. But I like isolation. Isolation is fun. But I would have liked to have more time to play video games. I was still working.
Same.
That's what I ended up having to do.
Same here. Same here.
Same.
Slightly different on this end. I have not been back into the office physically since March 13th, 2020.
God damn it.
Bastard. Bastard.
Yeah, but I had my toddler home for the first like few months, just like every day trying to like work. And like at the beginning of the pandemic, we still had like the baby gates up and he was still contained. Oh, and then through the pandemic, he taught himself how to open the baby gates. And then it was like, that's it. It's done. It's over. And then, so that was for a while until, you know, things got a little bit better. But yeah, for most of it, it was that. And then like the second half of the pandemic, like my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, both teachers, and they have two kids, and they've been doing like the half, like the hybrid situation. So for 3 days a week, I had my niece doing second grade remote learning. So there were days where, and my wife has been like half in and half out. So like an alternating schedule, like 3 days in 1 week, 3 days out the next week. So there'd be days where she'd be there to help, and then there'd be days where it would literally just be like me, my two-year-old, who's now three, and my niece, who's in second grade, and then me trying to work. And it was bonkers.
Sounds fantastic.
But I had like a list of like a dozen alarms to get me through every day. And then like after like a month of that, I didn't need the alarms anymore. It was just like every 15 minutes, here we go, what are we doing? But then we only had one day with her little brother who was doing preschool remote learning. And I would do an entire year of second grade. One day of preschool, it was like, nope. No, there is no point to that. Nope.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Yeah, the kid doesn't want to even pay attention to the goddamn freaking. Where's the camera? I don't care. What the hell?
What is remote preschool?
Let's return the sheer crayons. I will say. So this kid is super smart. He's all about oceanography and everything. I'll tell you so many facts about different ocean creatures. And the end of the day, him and this other kid were getting into an argument about like sharks or octopi or something like that. And it was like the badass, like the best conversation I've ever heard in my life. And I'm like, that should have been the entire day. Like, what am I doing for the rest of it? Like, it's nonsense.
So long as he doesn't know the history of dolphin secretions, that's okay.
So the ultimate irony in that is that at the end of the day, I did have time for video games, but I had no energy left. I was like, I could play games or I could just fall asleep on the couch.
Yeah, being a parent equals no energy. You're just like, sometimes it's like I get to the end of the day, I'm like, I'm gonna play a game. I'm already passed out.
You literally think about that game all day. You have energy to focus on playing that game all day, and then when the time comes, it's just not.
It's just done.
Then fucking Steam starts teasing you with Steam sales, and you start buying more video games that you're never going to fucking play.
My Switch is a 400 gig SD card in, and it's almost full. And half the games I've only played one time.
Throughout the entire pandemic, I've been trying so hard. I'm like, I'm not going to buy another game. I'm going to finish this game first. I'm going to get through it. I still fuck Thunderblade.
I love it.
I'm sorry. Fuck that dude. Like, I can't get by it. Then I stopped giving a shit, and I just started buying games. I'll have a library of shit to work through eventually.
Oh God! I just had to survive the last weekend with Steam. Steam was like, here's a sale, and just everything on my wish list was like, this is all 50% off, son of a bitch.
But it adds up. We know.
No, it adds up. And I dropped like $60 on like three or four games because I was like, I finally got a VR headset. When the fuck am I going to use it?
I got one of those for Christmas from my father-in-law, and same thing. I love it. Beat Saber is a blast, But, like, I got to move my coffee table. I got to, like, prepare to play video games in a way I've never had to.
I literally have the Oculus saved in my web browser because I've been, like, finger on the trigger. Like,
Come to my house.
There are some games that I really need the Oculus.
Really let me sell it to you.
Yeah, right?
See, I got the PlayStation VR, which is awesome. But I know there are more games for Oculus than there are PlayStation VR.
So that's part of my pandemic experience. I don't have kids. But I did get married and move during the pandemic.
And she has a kid.
And my wife has to deal with a 35-year-old child. So I lived in a house with the bass player of our band and the artist of our band, and that was a wild ride during the pandemic because there's a shit ton of people all living in the same house, which is fun. But we moved out of that house and we got married, and now we have our own space. And I have a father-in-law now, and he bought me an Oculus, the new one. So he was big into VR, and he had like the old ones that you have to have wired to the computer. So when we were trying to come up with Christmas presents, I was like, let's get him the new one. You don't need a computer, you don't need shit. So he gives me my Christmas present, and it's the same fucking thing. We gave each other the same exact present.
Are there any games you guys can play like online?
You can play Beat Sabers online, but he hacks all his because the sound packs for Beat Sabers are all terrible songs.
Yeah.
So it's all like techno and like house music, and then you can buy like a $15 Linkin Park like pack of like five songs, or you can hack it and just get like people map out two songs like classic rock tunes. And it's like, yeah, it's way more fun. And then
Beat Sabers with Tom Waits.
People do like AC/DC and you're like, yes, yes, yes,
dude, make it rain, dude, just sitting there hacking away.
But yeah, I've also been working the entire time. I was working from home for about a month and a half as well. But no, I've been in the building every day, wondering why I'm in the building every fucking day.
Why am I essential?
Because I work in a pharmacy. People need their medicine.
They literally bent over backwards to keep my company open. So I was like, someone called me Bernie Sanders during like the beginning of the pandemic, because I was like getting all the workers together. I was like, we need more pay. We need to we weren't getting paid. If you have sick time and vacation time, you can take as much time off as you want. But if you got COVID and didn't have sick time, the company was not going to pay you to stay home. So people aren't going to admit that they're potentially sick if they think they're not going to get paid if they get sent home. So everyone's going to keep coming into work because they're not going to get paid unless they come into work. The pandemic was a nightmare.
Probably the worst thing that happened was what happened with the music industry
in like 100
around here.
Years.
Well, yeah, but like one of the worst things, of course, was just how it affected the music scene around here. No concerts, and we lost so many great venues because of it.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
I'm sorry.
Seriously, it was like watching them like
drop. Someone needs to talk about it.
Oh my God. I can remember like that one moment where when you would do it. Was it you that was doing the one
virtual venue?
The virtual
venue. For Once Ballroom.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember dancing in my basement thinking like, there's a chance. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh my
God. We're coming out of this.
We're all screwed.
Yeah, I mean, we lost the Once Ballroom. We lost Great Scott. Although it is supposed to be coming back as a pizza place.
Which you could not ask for a better new location for a dive punk venue.
Right.
Than a pizza joint.
If they don't repurpose whatever ovens they're using for pizza.
I told serve it up punk rock and pizza.
I've actually talked to Clay Inferno. You know Clay, right?
Yeah.
And I've talked to him about this. I was like, you have to do punk rock themed pizzas. You gotta have like the Dinosaur Jr. which will have like the chicken nuggets, and they're shaped as dinosaurs. With meatballs, it's a comic.
I had two of those dino chicken nuggets on my way here. every time my wife makes them for my kids, she always knows I gotta make two extra for my big kid. I got a little bit of ketchup for
that. I feel like there has to be a Gwar pizza, and it has to be all phallic shaped. Types of foods.
Just big, long pizzas.
Wait, so I thought I heard longer ago than I heard about Great Scott, but that once, are they still searching? They find
it? They found like an outdoor venue.
They set up an outdoor venue. And yeah. I've been in vague communication with the booking agent about trying to do one DJ Flaccid event. Because I was like,
are they still
if I can do it once, I will bring a shit ton of people.
Just I will be there.
Everybody will meet each other, you know?
Are they still looking for like...
No, they have an outdoor venue. Yeah.
They have it.
So JJ that runs once... was completely devastated, and the irony in it all is that she ran a restaurant and then expanded into the place that had the ballroom and the lounge, and the restaurant was still the business. And when they had to, they didn't own the building, so when that all started to close down, she was trying to get money from the government, trying to keep the venue open, trying to do anything. Closed down about a month and a half later, she gets a check from the government. And she's like, well, they already kicked me out of the building. The venue was closed. And that's pretty much what happened across the country.
Right.
Is that everyone was trying to get Congress to pass the Save Our Stages Act.
Yeah.
And it came after everyone got kicked out of their leases. And right. That's part of the
wasn't
problem.
Wasn't there an act that was passed, though, that was about keeping people, like, said, like...
You read about that, but what it actually affected, it was way less than it should have been, which
exactly. And we lost Thunder Road too, which you guys, Road, yeah, that, you guys did some amazing
both,
shows.
Both of our album release shows were at Thunder Road. There was already a chance they were going to get closed, so Somerville could build more condos. But
of course,
Somerville is up and coming.
Yeah, no, that's the worst thing about it. They're all just like, no, we'll just fucking wipe this out.
Condos.
Put a parking lot or maybe some more condos.
Fuck it.
We need more people in this fucking
place. Let's fill it with more people.
Yeah. That's brilliant, though. It's like, hey, let's just knock out everything that's drawing people here in the first place and then expect people to pay insane amounts of money to live here when there's no reason because we...
Yeah, exactly. Dude, it's just
ridiculous. I don't understand. Like, people that live in Boston literally have to drive out of Boston to work to make the money to stay in Boston. I don't get it.
I know.
There's no jobs in Boston that could sustain the buildings.
People in Commonwealth can't live on Commonwealth Ave.
I lived on Commonwealth Ave for 2 years of my life, and it was mind-blowing. The things I had to do to stay afloat in that apartment.
Where you saw
I literally cannot speak
of. So all these places go up.
Now for our next segment, what did you do?
Yeah.
So for all these places closed, and yet that fucking shithole Union Tavern is still open.
So that Union Tavern is what PA's Lounge used to be called.
Oh, I know.
They're rebranded as Union Tavern, and it's the same shitty owner.
Beyond just like slapping a fresh coat of paint, like did they?
No,
they literally just put a new sign.
They just put up a new sign.
He changed the name of the business.
Did John Taffa come in and friggin' rebrand it?
John Taffa would have come in and said, fucking shut it down.
You're
making people sick. Get the fuck out of here.
You guys performed at a Halloween show a few years ago there, and I had to leave. Yep, you are 138. And I had to leave before the second act even finished because, Jesus Christ, you couldn't breathe.
Dude.
Everything smelt of sweat. And the asshole wouldn't turn on the fucking AC.
Every event.
You would turn on the overhead fans.
Every subsequent event there, you could just feel it getting like worse. Like at first it was like, oh, this is a dive bar with some charm. And you're like, wait a minute, that's not charm.
No, this is a dive
bar. No, it just got worse and worse. And then it's like, I don't know. It's like they didn't even want people there. It's like, how do you do that?
Yet they're still open!
I don't understand how people do that. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the old grumpy dude that runs the bar owns the building, and that because we Jason and I, the artist of the Stampede, and I talked about trying to buy that place. Cause we were like, this guy clearly doesn't want to run a venue. What the fuck is he doing? Sell out and let us own like this prime real estate.
Yeah,
like, if he's good enough to stay afloat, being an asshole. Like, imagine somebody who actually tried.
If you don't want to serve shitty beers to shitty customers on a Saturday night, let us do it for you. Please, let us do it for you.
We'll make that money. We'll make that money all day.
I will hand him that money every week.
We'll pay you a generous cut. Just stay the fuck out.
Just go home.
And never leave.
He'd be still sitting there just making everybody miserable. That's what they do best.
That's he loves it.
Every 5 minutes, he'll be in a corner every 5 minutes. You'll just hear a, man! You fucking youngins with your rock and roll disco music.
Oh, he hates us so much.
Yeah. All right, so rest in power, Thunder Road, once Ballroom of Great Scott, and go fuck yourself, Union Tavern, basically.
Yes.
But live shows are coming back. We have bought a shit ton of tickets.
Yeah, I keep buying tickets, even if I'm not going to go. Because I can support the fucking artists, and I hadn't spent money on tickets in so long. I'm just throwing money at shit. Fuck it.
Yes, welcome to the 15th anniversary of the No Borders, No Race podcast show.
We're all pissed off.
Yes, we are very pissed off.
15 years later, now we're all just a bunch of angry old guys.
Dear God, our parents were right. We were going to turn into them.
I used to be with it, then they changed what it is. Now what's it? It's scary and frightening to me. It'll happen to you.
So. Reminds me of that commercial. That was me 15 minutes ago. Yes. He just keeps losing his shit every day. That was me 1 minute ago. This is my daily work.
Yes.
I come into work thinking I'm okay, and then I just completely lose my shit.
Then you realize every day is Michael Douglas and Falling Down.
His best movie, by the way, but oh my God.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Anyways, on today's episode, we're going to be talking about our loves of music and everything. And our playlist today makes up artists that greatly influenced us and even influenced the creation of No Borders, No Race itself. So remember, as always, if you like what you hear and would like to support these artists, you can find their music on CD Japan, Amazon, Yes Asia, Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And I feel like the first act that we're going to play right now is a band that actually influenced the creation of No Borders, No Race. And it's a band that I heard, was listening at all the artists that were coming to South by Southwest, and these three girls, and I believe they are from Chiba, Japan, that just truly blew me away. And that band was called Tsushimami Ray. And they were the band that night I met Manny for the first time. We went to the Suicide Girls Burlesque show. Tsushimami Ray were the first act.
That was the first time you met him?
Yes, that was the first time we met.
That show was sick.
It was awesome. And we became friends with the band.
Yeah, we got to talk to them for a little bit after. Yeah. That was great. Actually, yeah. Didn't the drummer broke a snare or kick drum head?
Yeah, she broke her snare drum.
That was awesome. We did some pictures of us from that night.
Yeah, and we've interviewed Tsushimami Ray many times. Hogan, of course, back in 2008, we did that.
Yeah, I did that. I still can't believe that concert. That was, what, TT and the Bears? Was that?
No, Middle East Upstairs. It was them and
Middle East Upstairs.
It was them and Zazen Boys.
Yeah, and I still can't believe the bassist, like, she was, like, throwing that bass around like it was a rag doll. And I swear this one guy that was just in the front, I was just like, just, you're going to hit him in the face. Just go ahead and hit him. It's just literally swinging right by his, like, I can't believe she didn't knock his hat off. It was crazy. It's like, oh, my God. There's going to be blood. There will be blood.
Her kicks are, like, amazing, too.
Yeah, their energy on stage is insane. I was just telling my wife the other day about, I was listening to this, preparing for tonight, I was listening to Tsushimami Ray, and I was like, they were something to behold in a life.
They still are.
Just insane. They I haven't still seen them in so long. It's been a year and a half, everything is past tense now. Yeah. The world has moved on.
Yes. So we are going to be playing a song from their debut album, Pregnant Fantasy. And I would actually rank Pregnant Fantasy as one of the greatest punk debut albums ever written.
So good.
Up there with the Ramones, up there with the Clashes, up there with Sex Pistols, up there with Blue Hearts. This album is just perfection, and it's like the perfect introduction to Tsushimami Ray. And that song, Chris, is... fine, I'll say the hard stuff. This is Umeboshi Plum's Big Seed.
Bye.
from Beat Me, that was Electric Eel Shock with Lemon Lees. And the funny thing is, they came to Boston, I don't know if this is their first time or not, but it was back in 2006. And I went and saw them live. They were playing with a band called Pretty Boy Death Camp. And I'm at the show, rocking out with my cousin. Near the end of the show, I turn to my left, who's there? It's fucking Chris.
I was Middle East upstairs. That was my first introduction to the Naked Drummer.
Yes.
I was there too, right?
No. Oh God, the Naked Drummer.
I've definitely seen him. I've definitely seen his nigga ass on stage.
I definitely just said that like deadpan. I have no idea.
I've definitely seen that naked dude on drums.
If you think you have a hard time remembering shows, how is he think I remember?
But yeah, we've interviewed Electric Eel Shock, one of the greatest metal bands of all time, in my
they
opinion.
Still hold one of the best quotes I've ever heard in my entire life that will always resonate in my head forever. I don't remember what magazine it was for. And it was like, maybe I think we can beat Nirvana.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think you just did.
Yeah.
That's a reasonable goal.
Yes. Yeah. I think Dave Grohl would approve.
I mean, the drummer's playing butt naked. Well, not butt naked because he had a tube sock on, technically. With two sticks in each hand, like an animal. And just ripped it up. There's nothing I've seen.
Yeah.
Until since.
It's so weird. Like, they're still very underground in Japan. They're underground here in America. In Europe, they're fucking huge.
Yes. Yes, they are.
They're very
that tube sock says so.
Anyway, so reflecting back on the last 15 years, and before we dive into the second part of this, I want to, because we've all been on plenty of live shows around here in Boston, and I wanted to say as a bit of a guide, if you're coming to Boston to perform, if you're coming to Boston to go see a show live, where is the best venue to see a band? Where is that perfect amount of space, perfect acoustics?
I think
where is that?
That's a trick question.
Yeah, because they're all closed now.
Well, yeah. No, because it's New England. It's seasonal, right? So, like, summertime, I would say...
We're getting seasons now?
Are you going to go to the Pavilion in the dead of winter?
I would, but they're not open. Whatever the fuck it's called now. Blue Hills Bank of America.
Never mention the prefix. It's just the Pavilion.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the only one that makes it difficult is I think it's like the Comcast Center or Arena, whatever.
Xfinity Center.
You mean Great Woods.
Great Woods.
See, at least with the Pavilion, you can say the Pavilion no matter who buys it. But yeah.
You can't be like Bank of America Woods.
Yeah, you either dive back in history or you just agree with what it is.
Yeah, when they renamed
that thing in Mansfield.
There you go.
That's so fucking hard to. How long of a drive is it to get there from here? Is it like two?
Fucking annoying.
It's not the drive. It's that wild ass left fucking lane exit that like.
Oh my god! And sitting in that traffic to leave.
People coming on, trying to cut across four lanes to get to the exit, and
one. Please, I need to eat acid in front of my 4-year-old kid and see the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, King, remember we were there for System of a Down.
And Deftones.
And then there was the one where we went and saw Nine Inch Nails and Jane's Addiction.
Oh, was that show?
That was the thing. Like, we were just like, we watched Nine Inch Nails kick a lot of ass.
And then, Sweet Sweeper,
Jane's Addiction comes out, and it was complete, total fucking garbage. And they were like, okay, everybody has lit up weed around us. I feel lightheaded. Go home now. Beat the traffic.
We just left because we were like, we saw Nine Inch Nails, but what else is there to see? We're going to go home.
See, one of my earlier experiences with the polar opposite was it was Queens of the Stone Age opening up for the Chili Peppers. And I was down there to see the Chili Peppers, but I was also excited to see Queens of the Stone Age. By the time I got there, it was literally like, it was shortly after Dave Grohl was touring with him, so it was definitely Joey C, but it was...
Yeah, Joey's Castillo.
They just wrapped up, No One Knows is the encore, as we were walking in. And so I was like, that was half my night.
That's the only Queens of the Stone Age show that everyone that I know has been to that I haven't... that I was not at.
I was only there for 30 seconds. Dude, that blood sap was working so overtime. What place in your backyard?
I don't know, man. All I'm hearing is some testicles going on.
I know. Are you recording inside the science right now?
standing 10, 15 feet away, and that fucking thing lit on fire.
Bigfoot's getting tangled up in the fucking bug light.
Oh, light!
Dude, my coworker would be like, wow, that's amazing.
Hey,
put a light bulb near it.
Be safe, man. You got a wife and kids to get back to. Yeah. Don't go anywhere near that light.
No,
go away from the light.
Looking up, like, oh, shit, there's bats flying around. Oh, shit, there's a bunch of bugs now. Oh, crap. But, yeah, I'm still trying to figure out my venue. Like, I don't know. Like, I've been to, you know, I'm, like, still used to the House of Blues. But I really like talking about on a small scale or on a huge scale because you guys just went pavilion.
Yeah. I was going seasonal. And I would say for, like, that's outdoor. For indoor, I would say House of Blues, good mid-range. Mm-hmm. That's about as big as you can get before shit starts getting obnoxious.
Yes.
But their security sucks.
The security sucks, and their acoustics are okay.
And there's so many $1,000 a piece.
There's, what the hell was that other one we went to see the Queens of Stone Age at?
That was the Orpheum.
The Orpheum, yeah. The Orpheum.
Oh, the Orpheum, too.
Not, well, my big 6-foot fat ass friggin' trying to sit in those.
Oh my god! We had to, like, fetal position that.
It definitely depends on.
Oh, it's going again. Oh man, that one's juicy.
Kill it. Oh, there you go.
That's rock and roll right there.
So
I should put it in my fire pit. I saw Metallica at, you know, at the actual over at the Patriot Stadium. So it was at Gillette, and that was badass. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
That's a band that can play a venue like that too. Like they're gonna fuck that place up.
That's why I'm looking forward to when Rammstein does it.
I was up on the shelf, and they had the fireballs going off, and yep, you can feel them.
Yep. Oh yeah, I remember I was there back in 2003 for a Summer Sanitarium tour. It was them, Limp Bizkit, Linkin Park, Deftones, and Mudvayne, and like Metallica just like set the whole place on fire.
Yeah, I mean, Metallica's. I'm not the biggest Metallica fan, but Metallica, in my opinion, is the best band on that whole list that you just made. As far as, like, setting up in a fucking...
Yeah, I know.
...arena and just blowing shit
up. You didn't have that phase of, remember when we thought Limp Bizkit was cool?
I'm so proud of the fact that I skipped over that, and I've been hating on them for...
Fuck all y'all. I did it all for the Mickey.
No, I heard recent news that they're coming out with another album, and they were like, we've got like a bunch of songs coming out and stuff like that. So is it going to be better than Golden Cobra? Because that was god awful. Fuck that shit.
They're probably going to just announcing a comeback is fantastic. And they're like, yep, we are still going to do something.
I'm just waiting for the next chocolate starfish and the hot dog.
Yeah, just do another anthology of that or something.
You know, imagine how disappointed I was when I realized that wasn't a meal.
It's a meal. It's a meal.
It's a meal if you're sushi.
It's an expensive
meal. It's a meal if you're free. So, getting into... Don't clap. It's loud.
Clap hard.
So, I've always been a fan of smaller venues. Obviously, TT the Bears has now turned into Sonya, which is still open.
Sonya's still good.
The sound system is amazing. It's really hard to get into Sonya now, though. So, like, they don't lean towards, like, local bands. They're like, you know, so it's like now this place that was known since the 80s for, like, supporting local bands is this fancy venue in Central Square, you know?
Right.
But I saw... Nine Inch Nails at the Wang Theater.
Oh, shit.
And a year before that, I saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds at the Wang
Theater. Yes, you and I were at that show.
I've been to the Wang Theater before, but never did I think that I wanted to see two of my heroes at the fucking Wang Theater. But both times, I had decent seats. I got to just observe, like, what the band was doing. And more so than anything, when I got Nine Inch Nails announced the tour. Trent Reznor was like, you can't buy tickets online, you have to get in line. So me and a bunch of friends stood in line, got in line at 5 a.m., made it like a whole thing. We were like, went to bed early, got up, camped out for tickets, like back when, you know, I was a kid and I didn't do that, but I wish I did that. For like Nirvana tickets, like back in the day, you had to like camp out, physically be there to get tickets. But we did that and we got tickets. And seeing Nine Inch Nails in that setting, because Trent's whole idea was to like tone down all the effects. It was like patterned strobe lights in the fucking band and fog machines, and it's just the best show I've seen. Being a Nine Inch Nails fan and being someone who's seen him on like so many different tours, watching him just wheel it way the fuck back, be like, this is about the band, just getting out there and just fucking performing, and just like some cool lights flashing with like fog. I was like, this is the Nine Inch Nails I want to see. I was like, he used to, it's screens and effects and fucking projections. I'm like, okay, I understand you have more money than any of us can imagine performing with, but just seeing him like locked down, but also being like a little bit older and just being able to like be at the front row of the balcony and like be like, oh, I don't need to be in the pit getting punched by Kurt like repeatedly for 2 hours because Nine Inch Nails is on. It's like, that's a nice change. So that would be my, like, both venue as an adult. Mm-hmm. The Wang Theater has somehow become like my favorite.
So you would take the Wang over the Orpheum, because I feel like those are the most comparable.
Where I had my seats for both Nick Cave and Nine Inch Nails was the front row of the like upper section of the balcony. Mm-hmm. So there's like a walking path in front of you. Oh, yeah. But like for Nine Inch Nails, I was practically pole dancing like on the rail because there was nobody in front of me. I was like, this is the greatest experience.
Honestly, it's amazing that you didn't just like tip over the edge and you never saw you again.
I had a lot of good friends there for me.
For me, when it comes to venues, like I have to think of good space and amazing acoustics. And for me, the place that has the best acoustics that I've ever experienced in a show is the Sinclair. Now, the Sinclair is
the one place I have not fucking been to.
I can't believe you've ever been there.
I know.
That's
embarrassing.
I had the first best experience with the Sinclair because my friend and I went there to see The World Inferno, Friendships Aside, Rust and Power, Jack Terry Cloth.
Seriously.
Like, you could hear every instrument in that band.
Love that place.
Perfectly.
The pictures I've seen, it doesn't seem like a space that would really like lend itself to.
It's a small square with an upper balcony, but the sound system is like top fucking.
It is amazing. I've seen World Inferno. I've seen Turbo Negro there, which was an amazing show. Mark Lanegan. Front and center in the Mark Lanegan show was amazing. And the last concert I actually was at.
You mean to say that was more fun than standing behind that giant pillar at the Paradise?
They finally got rid of that goddamn pillar.
Yeah, they finally did. Okay. But the last show I went to before all this shit went down was at the Sinclair. It was Mongol Horde, which is Frank Turner's hardcore punk band.
Oh, wow.
And that show just ripped.
I saw two nights of Shaky Graves. It was at Sinclair. And then the next week of Montreal played Sinclair. Mm-hmm. And so the last video that I took on my phone, literally the last video I took before we all went into lockdown, was of Montreal playing fucking a Nirvana cover. Like their encore was a Nirvana cover. So they started going, and me and Tony,
I don't care.
So he's having so much fun, and then like they're a rock and roll dance electronic like poppy band. So like people dance, people move, but they came out with that song, and like people were like rolling across the crowd. I was like, this is greatest. And then like 2 weeks later, it was like, what were we doing? Was sweating in the same room with all these people. Like, we were like looking at those pictures and we're like, what have we done? We're all gonna die.
You didn't know, but I'll say I've been spending a lot of time with Daniel Tiger and some Paw Patrol. have you fucking heard about Octonauts? Oh, fire.
Are they like the Aquabats?
Fire.
I don't know, but they make learning fun. And I learned about cookie cutter fish, and then when I saw those motherfuckers in real life, they're scary as all hell. Octonauts did not do them justice.
All right. So I guess that will lead to maybe the next question is the best show we've seen in the last 15 years.
Ah, and now we are back to the question that Manny was stumped on during our little break. He doesn't know.
I'm gonna know the second you say it.
I think what we should do, everybody say theirs first, but you at whatever time, you have three guesses.
I can't even come up with three guesses.
Dude, that's
come on the show.
No. That's why I'm embarrassed. So don't put me on the goddamn spot.
Am I allowed to guess?
Absolutely.
Them crooked vultures.
First.
Oh, God damn it!
Nailed it.
That's more than 15 years ago.
No, it's not. I know. As soon as he did that, and I caught it back, and I was like, "Oh shit, that's within the time frame."
That feels like 30 years ago.
Doesn't it? Oh man.
We were all at that show. Hogan, we were like right in the middle, seeing Josh Homme, Dave Grohl, John Paul Jones.
Are you kidding me?
The fucking House of Blues, and that's why that place is gonna be so like outdoor. I don't know. I say Tweeter Center because that's what I always fucking remember it as.
Great Woods.
Because I think when I went to see Queens of the Stone Age and Chili Peppers, it was Tweeter Center back then.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That sounds about
so
right.
That's cool, but I love the Pavilion. I saw the Foo Fighters
awesome.
For the first time in the Pavilion, and it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
A killer summertime venue. And then for the wintertime, obviously I'm biased because of them Crooked Vultures. I gotta say that it's the House of Blues. But also, because the House of Blues is there. Back in the day, I miss the split of the
Axis
Avalon and the
Axis.
The only show that I remember.
Saw the Black Keys at the Avalon.
I saw Black Keys. I've seen Nine Inch Nails there. I've seen I saw the Foo Fighters at the Avalon.
The only show that I actually got to see. The only show I ever got to see at the Avalon was fucking Kaiju Big Battle.
Oh, wow. Mm. I saw Distillers open for AFI.
Wow.
At the fucking Apple.
Oh, you see AFI? You love
it. Yeah, I've seen AFI two times. Once was at Warped Tour, and I died of heat stroke. And I clearly survived.
No. But this is the ghost guy.
I saw Kurt and I didn't have tickets to see the Distillers in AFI. We vastly undersold a scalper because we're like, the show's almost over. Let us in. The show is not almost over. But the scalper clearly didn't know anything about the show.
Hey, that's awesome. Because honestly, fuck scalpers.
Yeah, fuck scalpers.
Yeah.
Always stealing the Stampede's money.
No one is scalping our tickets. I wish people would scalp our tickets. That would mean...
That's how great
shit sounds to me.
As a concert goer, fuck scalpers. As a musician, that's high praise.
That's high praise.
All right, Blue, tell me about your favorite show of the last 15 years.
I think it was the one that we went to, and I could be wrong, it was probably, the Mighty Mighty Boston's.
Sticks out there. The Hometown Throwdown.
I saw those flyers.
I can't remember what exact song it was, but they're throwing the snowflake, like the bubble snowflakes out. And the floor is getting slippery, but it was still just an amazing concert, like, just to be there. But especially, like, when mosh pitting against these freaking guys. And, like I said, I'm a big dude. These dudes were bigger. And bouncing off the back of them was, like, the funniest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And they just were like, hey, stop it. And it's like, go fuck yourself. You're in the middle of a mosh pit. Go fuck yourself.
Isn't that the entire point?
I just gotta say I love you, Blue, right now, because I don't think they understand. You escaped the bugs, and they probably haven't picked up on it, but I know a motherfucker who's not trying to wake children.
Oh, right?
Children.
I can tell. Hey.
Oh, it's second nature.
We're all just trying to get by. We're just trying to fucking get by.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to wake up those children either.
Yeah.
Dude, my kid woke me up at like 2 o'clock. I've been essentially up since 2 a.m. this morning. So, I'm good.
Okay. So for me, I've seen many great shows. We've seen Queens of the Stone Age many times. We've seen Eagles of Death Metal. We've seen Rammstein in concert. Roger Waters doing The Wall in its entirety. So many shows. But when it comes to a show that really stands out for me, that was like the closest thing to a true like religious experience I've ever had.
Oh boy.
Nick Cave, Sanders Theater.
Oh
him at a piano, doing Q&A, and then pouring his heart and soul out into songs like The Ship Song and Jubilee Street, covering Leonard Cohen with Love and Lane. And that, I left that show being like, that single-handedly was the greatest thing I have ever seen performed on stage.
It's he's a wonder, and seeing him in that context is seeing somebody who's been around and been doing it for so long, and then watching him strip it back to the most basic it could be, just like him talking about a song and then like playing it on a fucking piano. It's fantastic.
I know. And the venue itself, so the Sanders Theater, for people who have never been,
I've never seen that place. It's like in the, it's part of Harvard.
Yeah,
it's this big
acoustic. Is that the one we went to?
It's like in a church.
Tony, it was like,
We he was there. Me and Tony went, and Emma and Hallie went.
Yeah, that I think if this is the same place I'm thinking of, the pictures, it was gorgeous.
Yeah. This was like it was like a mixture of a church and like Congress.
It felt like being at church and listening to the cave and watching the cave is already very church-like. In his past lives, he was a preacher, and now he's a preacher, but just like on the wrong side of things. I saw the first two conversations with Nick Cave from the year before, and so that was, I was like already talking that up to him. I was like, it's the greatest thing ever. But yeah, it's like a religious experience.
Yeah, without question. But yeah, those are some of those shows I will always remember. Like the ones that we've all been to together, man. Like you guys were always like my go-to. Like whenever a show would come around, I was like, hey, do you want to come see this?
If any of us weren't all like the best bands, we were all going to see because they're the best bands.
Right. And we feel privileged because, like, it may sound weird, but, like, the best bands are playing in the smallest venues.
Yeah.
And it's always, like, a good get-together.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about music. But first, I'm going to play a little band called Giddle Giddle Hustler. And they were another band that I found out around at the same time as Sushi Mommy Ray. And, again, just crazy motherfucking girls just ripping into punk music in a way that I personally had never heard until this band hit my ears. So from their Giddle Giddle Galore EP, this is Muscle Bound Ecstasy.
Sugiru,
T-bone steak. That was P-Lander Z with S-T-E-A-K steak. The first time I ever saw P-Lander Z was at the Kaiju Big Battle Show. They were the opening act. And then Blanik and I went and saw them during P-Lander Rand's farewell tour when they played with Electric Eel Shock.
That was fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Like I hadn't dealt with like a concert like that. And dealing with like a kaiju kind of thing, that was holy shit. Just was not expecting that, and especially in that small ass of a venue.
Great venue. You guys have seen P-Lander Z, of course, on many occasions.
Yeah, I have definitely seen them before that, because I was at the kaiju show, but I saw them at Great Scott before that.
I thought the Great Scott show was after that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was, but the kaiju definitely was not the first time I saw P-Lander Z.
Because I feel like at Great Scott, they had either just got a new drummer, or there was like the last...
Well, I mean, I've seen them more than once at Great Scott. They definitely did not get rid of P-Lander. Well, P-Lander Red was the first one to leave the band.
No, P-Lander Blue was the first to leave.
So it was the drummer.
Was he the drummer? Bass?
The drummer,
yeah.
That was the time that I saw them at Great Scott. Yeah. I think he was either like... They just replaced him, or he was like... That was like his last tour with him.
Yeah, because the P-Lander Green came in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is P-Lander Green, yeah. I definitely saw them once before the Kaiju Big Battle show.
And that's actually
kind of saw them was at Great Scott.
And that's how you and I kind of bonded, because like we were waiting for the anime club door to open and you would get unlocked, and you had talked about like P-Lander Z or something, and like that was like that. Did we just become best friends? Well,
I was saying that to him the other day. So P-Lander Z, Asian Kung Fu Generation, and Guitar Wolf. I randomly found out about all three of those bands from some random Comcast channel that I was like flipping on with my girlfriend, and I saw the Guitar Wolf video, I saw Steak, and I saw Loop and Loop from Asian Kung Fu Generation. So then it's like then to meet somebody who like knows these bands and could like expand my, you know, it was wild to stumble across some bands and then meet and find a person who's also into like these same bands.
That was the golden age of things where like Comcast sucked, but at least they still provided something cool.
CNA was a great channel.
I have no recollection of what the channel was.
CNA, they used to play like Beastie Boys concerts.
Yeah.
And but they actually played great music on that station.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, you had that. That was the age of the internet when, like, Homestar Runner was, like, still, like, doing things. Like, there was good things in the world, and there was so much reason for hope. And there was all these tools that just,
well, that
screwed us over in the long run.
It's so funny to think back on that time where, like, technology was great, but it was only so great. Like, you can only do so much, and realistically, humans need to have a little bit more restriction, because clearly, when too many people communicate, we start going into really dark holes.
Here's the line drawn in the sand. There was a moment in our lives where you used to have a smartphone, and people would be like, oh, what's that? So when people had like, oh, everybody's got a smartphone.
No, done. Everybody shouldn't have a smartphone.
I feel like you need to have like an IQ test before you own a smartphone. I mean, it's in the fucking name.
Fucking TikTok users, goddamn them.
Yes.
Like millions of dollars and doing stupid shit. This is so much.
I know. But I feel like that will lead us to probably the best bands that we've discovered this last 15 years. And I want to split it, because with No Borders, No Race being predominantly Japanese promotion, I want to talk about both Japanese bands and the non-Japanese bands that we have discovered, and which ones like took the cake when it comes to that aspect.
I struggle with that one, because I feel like as far as Japanese bands, it predates. I don't know if it goes before 15 years or not. I don't know if it's within that timeline. I would say the Pillows.
Yeah, I think they're...
Like, I know the Pillows are like the Asian Kung Fu Generation was like one of the ones that like opened the door. No,
but Asian Kung Fu Generation doesn't exist.
When you hit the pillows, when you see like the enormity of their catalog and the Cool Spice where they start, like, oh my god, that Cool Spice so good, so much. It's fantastic.
Monochrome Lovers, man.
Asian Kung Fu Generation doesn't exist without the pillows.
Right.
So it's like, as much as I love Asian Kung Fu Generation, that's like saying any band that is great, but not mentioning the Beatles. It's like this, in my opinion, as far as Japanese rock goes, the pillows, they're the Beatles of Japanese rock. In my head, I mean, assessment has been made before.
That assessment has been made in my head many, many times. Back when I was at Norwalk Community College, and Blawnik, I don't know if you might remember this or not, because we were, of course, we've been friends for many, many, many years. But yeah. I actually wrote an article in the North Shore Community College newspaper about why the pillows were the next Beatles. And they fucking published that in it.
I just recently relearned Secret Song. I can't.
We could Secret
Song. I relearned it, but I couldn't play it right now because I relearned it like a month ago. So I relearned it and I got like emotional at myself and then I forgot it already. But Secret Song to me is the pillows trying to sound like the Beatles.
Yeah.
It's a Secret Song on Fool on the Planet, which is already a play on a Beatles.
All I remember is there was no other band on the face of the planet that we have bent over backwards more for when we used Almeida's place to film those two songs. And then I remember I was working at the IT department in Salem State. So as I'm going around doing updates on the computers, I'm running the YouTube videos to boost the
video. That was the pillows.
Because we came in so late to the game on that pillows contest, but we got an honorable mention.
Yeah, they mentioned you guys. They said, "Oh, these guys should be signed by Sub Pop Records."
There's a video of them saying that we should be signed as. What's crazy is that they're talking about like my YouTube name and not the name of the band, which is staggering because we weren't entering as the Stampede; we were just entering a YouTube contest.
Wait, what was the YouTube handle at that point?
The Stampede 69.
Classic.
But yeah, because the pillows for me began my journey into learning Japanese music and rock and pop and metal and everything. But I feel like in the history of doing No Borders No Race, I've heard many great bands. I've heard many amazing acts that have come across me. The one band that every time when they release a new album, like I import it straight from Japan because they don't unfortunately sell it here in the West or even on like Amazon MP3 or iTunes or anything. The one band that I do this for because they blow me away every single time is a band, and I think you've saw them live at part of Japan Night 2007, the Goju Kaitans.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Goju Kaitans have that sort of Beatles look that but they have that Ramones sound.
Yeah.
And it took me a while for me to realize that they're doing an homage to classic Showa era rock and roll in Japan, but like super fast. And the songs are funny as well too. They're comedians. They're rock comedians as they call them. But every album they have released, like I know it's supposed to be funny what they are singing, but it blows my mind at how hard it rocks every time.
Yeah, I can't remember what year it was, but there was a band called The Beaches at Japan Night.
I think this was 2008.
I bought both their CDs, and I listened to them every year. Summer rolls around, I put those albums on. Great dance music. I have videos. I'm in that Japan Night group on Facebook, and I've been waiting to like do a video drop because I have some sick videos back in the day. But the Beaches did a Love Buzz cover, so it was clearly them covering Nirvana, and it's already a cover song. But they turned it into like a tropical dance beach cover of Nirvana, and I watched that video. I'm like, these dudes are on another level. But what's hilarious about that band is that you can't find anything about them. Because if you search Japan and the Beaches, a small underground band is not what comes up on fucking Google. There's no way to find them on Google.
Same fucking thing with fucking Pez.
Oh my god!
Four songs have never changed my life more.
That album's so good.
Oh my god. I could listen to those four songs for
so fucking good.
And it's like, it's the same thing. You try to search, are they still, like, what's going on? P-O-S-O-P-E-Z. Yeah. Fuck, I can hear the drum, like the intro right now. Whatever, man. Where are they? Oh, are we playing footsie? Watch out. Hogan, you better come down. We're playing footsie now.
Yeah.
No, he'll bring a buzz out, but we're all fucked.
I'm 5 minutes away.
Blue, what about you? Like, what Japanese act did I tortured you with? Was the one that you felt least tortured with?
Oh, well, I mean, Sushi Mama Yuri was pretty damn good. That was melt your face off. Holy shit, you know, what the fuck did I just watch when I was at that concert? Mm-hmm. Then, oh God, what the hell is the name of that band? I know there's, well, I like baby metal, because I like metal stuff.
Yeah.
But, what the hell is the guy that dresses up as a maid and sings with the two girls or something like that?
Oh, so you're thinking of, so originally it's Lady Baby, and now it's going to be Baby Beard. He has a new band called Baby Beard. You're thinking of Lady Beard.
Oh, okay, so, yeah, that guy, that scared the shit out of me.
He's awesome!
But it was pretty, like, hardcore, like, metal stuff, you know, and I enjoyed that, and it, I mean, yeah, you did torture me with a lot of other bands that I was like, who the fuck is this? What are they saying? But I mean, like, I listen to Rammstein all the time, and I kind of like, you know, it's almost the same thing. It's like, well, I don't understand what they're saying all the time, but if I can take some time to find out what they're actually trying to say in the song, then maybe I can understand it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Shuji Mariuri, that one sticks out the most. That's, you know, it, being there and almost getting hit in the face with a bass was probably one of the most extreme things. And then being able to interview him afterward was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sick.
All right. Okay, so what about the rest of the world? What's the band these last 15 years that you felt has changed your life the most?
God damn it.
The Stampede.
Oh, Stampede, there you go.
I mean, to be completely honest, that band has physically and mentally changed my life.
Of course.
More than any other band because I've had to work so hard. No, I was into a lot of punk when I was younger, so I listened to The Birthday Party. I had Junkyard when I was in high school. I had a girlfriend that loved...
You said high school, but, so does that kind of...
No. So I'm saying...
Okay.
So I knew who Nick Cave was. But in the past 15 years of my life, Nick Cave has been the late 2000s, I found the Grinderman album.
Yes.
Because Josh Homme does a remix of Mickey Mouse and the Goodbye Man. And that song... In itself, that is one of the greatest intros. And then it's like Josh Homme made this weird, like, tripped out remix of it. So I found that remix that was released by Josh Homme, and then backtracked into the Grinderman's second album. Then listened to the first album, and then got the Dig Lazarus Dig, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds album. And I was like, wow. I got mad at Zach McGowan, our buddy that was in a band named Ghost Box Orchestra, because he's like kind of an older brother to me. I was like, why didn't you tell me that this is what his fucking music sounded like? You know me. Why didn't you tell me to listen to this fucking band? So I got Dig Lazarus Dig, and then I backtracked and listened to every Nick Cave album until I got to Nocturama, which is renowned as the worst Nick Cave album. I was like, why does this suck so much? And then I went back to the first album, which is From Her to Eternity, and then I went from there forward, and I was like, oh, he's the greatest songwriter that I could ever worship. So although I've known Nick Cave for a long time, in the past 15 years of my life, that has been a drastic influence on me as far as work ethic, as far as just being a lyricist, as far as someone who he literally is like, oh no, we wear suits because when we're gonna fucking walk out there, we're going to work. He's like, this is our job, we're gonna take it fucking seriously. Motherfucker has an office space because he got paid to write songs, so he's like, I go to work every day at 9 o'clock. He's like, there's a piano, it's a fucking typewriter, and there's one picture on the wall. And if I go there and nothing comes out, I still have to go there every fucking day because I'm a songwriter and that's my job. And I can only hope to reach that level of professionalism songwriting at some point in my life. At some point, I'm trying. The clock is ticking. Clock is fucking ticking.
All right, everybody's looking at me, so I guess...
Your turn.
I don't know. Probably sounds like a little bit of a cop-out, but honestly, I'm racking my brain. And literally, the only thing was just... And I'm still like... I'm waiting, and I'm not hopeful, but every time I see a little bit of a rumor, I'm like, oh, maybe, maybe. But them Crooked Vultures...
They're coming. They're gonna...
I'm sorry, but like...
They're gonna do it.
If we're going further back than 15 years, hands down, it's Queens of the Stone Age. Songs for the Deaf was like a completely game-changing album. There's parts of that album is like borderline perfection.
It's the greatest rock and roll album of our generation. Like,
agreed.
In my opinion, like it's far straight rock and roll.
And then it completely took on an entire different fucking
left turn.
Yeah.
Lullabies to Paralyze.
No. I meant when with them Crooked Vultures.
It's
I mean, it's just. Yeah, there's nothing else that's come close to me to that than that.
That's a fantastic choice.
Yeah, I think with me, it definitely has to be a band that I've seen live on many occasions, and they're one of the only bands where I would say that they have created multiple magnum opuses, and I have to say that because they keep changing what kind of band they are, and that band is Fucked Up. Fucked Up. When I first got introduced to them back in late 2008, it was their second album, The Chemistry of Common Life. And I think it was my buddy Matt Bonatatapis who had given me like some of their music and such, because we were broke college kids. Trading music was the only way we could find out new music. So one of the bands that he had given me was Fucked Up, because the band's called Fucked Up. I'm curious.
Fantastic.
What am I going to see? Is it going to be some sort of noisecore melt banana kind of shit?
It's going to be called Fucked
Up. You've
got
to show up with a name like that.
And then I start playing their second album, which is The Chemistry of Common Life, and that song The Thunder hits, and it's like a fucking roller coaster. Like, it starts off slow, little guitar, and then all of a sudden it just goes, wow! And you're like twisting and turning through Damien's vocals and Mike's guitar playing and all the other people. And throughout all my life, that is one of the very few albums I listened to where I sat there and did nothing but listened to that album from start to finish.
Isn't that a great feeling when like you're like, all I want to do is just like absorb this album? That's a fucking great feeling.
But it wasn't like. It wasn't my intention to be absorbed.
The
I was like, I'll listen to this while I work on something. And then all of a sudden,
you roped in.
It was
out of your hands at that point.
Roped in. So, Chemistry of Common Life blew me away. And then they did the rock opera, David Comes to Life, which I'm so excited they're actually going to be doing it full at the Sinclair in January. I'm going to that show.
Nice.
They changed my perception of what to do when it comes to rock operas. They did Glass Boys, which was a really good album, but kind of different. It was kind of like we're kind of getting older, but we're still kind of punk sort of feeling there. But then they did Dose Your Dreams, which is kind of a sequel to David Comes to Life. And they throw every music genre you can think of into that one album. And it just blows your mind that this is just one band. Picture, you know Mike Patton. Mike Patton has Faith No More, Mr. Bungle, and like all these different bands with different sounds. Fucked Up is taking all of Mike Patton's projects and putting them into one. And for me, like, they came out this year with Year of the Horse. It's part of their Zodiac series, which is one song that's 95 minutes long.
Sick.
And it's an epic. Like, I sat there listening to this, being like, they keep one-upping themselves, but at the same time, they keep evolving the sound. The Fucked Up that I knew with their first album, Hidden World, is nothing like the Fucked Up that Year of a Horse and Dr. Dreams is. Like, they have blown up to becoming one of the greatest rock bands, the greatest punk acts to ever grace this earth of ours.
And they definitely can't play it on the radio because they can't say fucked up.
Yeah. Right.
What's that band again? Bleep Up.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I remember the first time I played them on No Borders No Race at WMWM Salem. Like, you were on your way to the station listening to your car. And like 20 minutes later, you came in and it was like, what was that first band you fucking played, man? What was that?
There's
a band called Holy Fuck that's like electronic live music. They had the same problem. They were like, we want to keep making t-shirts, but all the t-shirts say Holy Fuck and no one wants to make them anymore.
Damn it. Well, what was that? The Bloodhound Gang there. They have that like Foxtrot. What the hell is it? Unicorn or Uniform, and then like Charlie Kilo. That's because they're spelling out fuck.
Their CD was a boob.
Yeah.
Kurt, our buddy Kurt, used to put his tongue through it, and it looks like a nipple. It looks like a perfect nipple. Bloodhound Gang. What a band. What a group.
Yeah. Electric Eel Shock actually used to tour with them. They're in the Untis Untis video.
No shit.
Yeah, they're in one of the bathroom stalls.
That's awesome. Have you listened to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard?
Yes, I've listened to King Gizzard. I lost track of how many fucking albums they have.
He's talking about bands that change their fucking sound. So they're going to get me stunned. They're on 18 albums from like 5 years of recording. And they're all masterpieces. They have like jazz, improv works.
So definitely within the 15-year threshold.
I'm going to set your homework assignment to listen to Quarters by King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard. Because of all the shit that I've talked about with them.
I think my band would probably be, and I think Chris might have introduced this to me, possibly the Black Keys.
Ooh. Black Keys, yes.
There.
That's not normal for me to introduce other people.
Talk about a band that can, like, change their sound too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, having to deal with, like, going through, I haven't gotten to really follow them recently, but you know, when I was introduced to them, I was like, holy crap, this is like perfection of what the 70s could be.
Yeah.
You know, like how the music could, like how it could have been, and they, you know, probably my friends would probably listen to them because it was that good.
Yeah.
You know, it just was nice to be able to, like, listen, sit back and just play the CD breakthrough. It just was nice. I hadn't really thought about other bands, you know, like prior to the 15 years would be like System of a Down. But like, System of a Down has fallen off the map so hard, and I hate them for it. So, it pisses me off that they did what they did. But and I still don't count those two songs that they did recently. I was like, that's bullshit.
That's
bullshit. Give me a fucking whole. There's tons of fucking articles about you guys like, yeah, we're almost there. And then somebody like pulls out and says, No, it's not there yet. And it's like, Darren, shut the fuck up. Just put the fucking music on. Just do it. But yeah, no, Black Keys definitely was one of the top ones. And then yet again prior to that, Renshaw, probably.
I would say Black Keys are fantastic. They hit a new fucking level when they paired with Danger Mouse to do Attack and Release. That just destroyed everything. And I will say for them, a hidden gem for me that took me a while to come back to was, but now I fucking love it, is Turn Blue. Has some of my...
Turn Blue took me a while to get into.
But I
completely fell off.
Yeah.
I didn't even listen to it, or I didn't buy that album, but I listened to it. And then I got hammered one day at a bar, and then I went like back to someone's apartment and they were like, yeah, the Black Keys. It's like, I love the fucking Black Keys. Like, they put it on, I was like, what the fuck is this? And they're like, it's the Black Keys. I was like, oh, all right, let me listen.
That and Brothers, because Brothers, I think, was done, they were writing that while they were on tour. And that was put together really quickly. But that said, Brothers in Turn Blue has like some of my... That just
magic,
great songs.
Potion.
I'll say this: like,
fucking potion.
Magic potion was the calm before the storm of attack.
Magic potion
was like magic. They were like brewing. Like they were brewing the magic potion right there.
Dirty, heavy,
fuzzy,
two-person fuzz ass rock.
I will say this because I listen to a lot of Black Keys. I have all of their albums, but these past couple of years, I found myself going back more to Dan Auerbach's solo album, Waiting on a Song.
Are you kidding me? That album is a fucking masterpiece.
I was like, this is what it brought back to what Blue said. This is what the 70s should have sounded like.
You can't deny the influence that his solo album had on the direction the Black Keys took.
Right.
After that.
Yeah.
Right, with Let's Rock and even with the cover album they just did with Delta Cream.
That album is amazing. The first track. I get worked up every time I hear that track. It's like him, I forget the other guy's name, but they're like harmonizing perfectly. Brother, mother, sister. It's so fucking good. That solo album is amazing.
It is. All right. When we come back, we are going to hear the Stampede performing a very special acoustic set for us. But right now, we are going to play one of the other bands that greatly influenced my love for Japanese music, Lark on CL. This particular song served as the opening theme for Full Metal Alchemist, and that was Ready, Steady, Go.
Are you ready?
Cookie turned egg, who came? Can't get you.
that was Asian Kung Fu Generation with Rewrite, which also served as an opening theme to Full Metal Alchemist. And I know, Manny, you love Asian Kung Fu Generation, of course.
And me too.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it gives me great pleasure to welcome onto No Borders or Race for the first time our good buddies, the Stampede, about to do the very first ever acoustic performance on our podcast show. And it's really special to me because, like, you guys were the first band to ever perform on the old No Borders No Race radio show.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride.
It has been.
It's been a long time.
We're proud to be just as awkward on the radio as we
But yeah, guys, you're just starting out then. You were two-piece, and now you've grown into, like, five members in your band.
Five pieces, yeah. Yeah, they, people only want to listen to two of us for so long.
too many pieces. We got to start cutting some
dead. cutting some fat off this dead animal we call a band.
Anyway, I'm
Steve
so happy.
Jerky coming soon.
I'm so happy you guys are here. So tell me about the first song that you're going to perform.
Take it or leave it. It's the first song off our first album, our self-titled EP. It's actually a song that we wrote shortly before we got a third member. So we started playing this as a two-piece, but it sounds way better with the addition of Tony on bass. So yeah, we're going to do that, and then we're going to do the second song on that same album. But a while ago, we revamped that song. It's called Revolving Door into Evolving Door because it's a different version of the same song. Also from our first album. So should we take it away?
Yeah, take it or leave it, dude.
He knows it, so.
Take it when you're bleeding. I don't know who's listening. I don't know if they're my friends.
I guarantee you I will screw this next song. Yeah.
Slap. Oh no!
It's no, the bongos.
It's okay. If it goes this way, then I just hit this drum more. If it goes this way, hit this drum more. Balance it out.
Absolutely.
No, I've actually been terrified.
It's a world of balance.
I've actually been terrified it's going to fall.
Move it out of your way now.
It's sounding good. It's sounding great, man.
Oh yeah. I just balanced these on
the Now Chris is pulling out the guitar right now.
We're gonna do a cover. We may need to do two takes. Let's see how it goes.
We may need to do all night.
Well, they have to kick us out of 10, so who knows?
I'd like to see them try. Barricade that door.
You kick out the man, but you can never kick out the idea. Oh, that's bad.
Who are you?
Just play the first note.
Good.
What?
Oh, hold on, that's a cool leash.
Whoa! We have some good dogs here.
Get them dogs in here, we gotta sing them a song.
We even have a pet
tiger. Anybody who sees that video is not gonna know what we're talking about.
A pet, they're gonna clearly know we're talking about dogs.
Yeah, but they don't know how awesome it is.
Alright, you ready?
How much have you got? My generation don't trust no one. It's hard to blame. Not even ourselves. The thing that's real for us is fortune and fame. All the rest seems like gold. It's just like diamonds in shit. I'm high. I'm a boy, actually both. Basically, I'm a girl. We've all got our own style for baggage. Why hump it yourself? You make an offer that I can't refuse. Cause either way, it's true. Counter proposal, I go home and jerk off.
Together.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right. As long as that doesn't fucking be awesome. was not. That was not horrible, but I think it could be a little bit better.
That sounded great, but I know you guys are perfectionists and everything like that.
Far from perfectionists.
Yeah, we're perfectionists. We practiced the two days leading up to this, like, screw, like, oh shit, yeah. We can pull this off.
We are
two men who like to impersonate perfectionists. That's what we're best at, is impersonating a perfectionist.
Imperfectly.
We're
is that a word?
Imperfectionist.
Imperfected imperfection. Imperfected professionist. Profession.
Imperfected professionalist, yes.
Imperfected professionalist.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Alright. Shit, what's next?
You know what's next.
There's a family show, right? We don't swear.
No, you can curse.
I've had multiple curses belted out at the top of my volume already tonight.
You can curse as long as you don't raise the dead.
I want to curse and raise the dead. Are you ready?
Sure.
So this is one of our oldest songs. It was on our first demo from 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? What is time?
It's meaningless.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, are you counting from when we wrote it or when we recorded it?
It's both. One of the oldest written and recorded songs.
Written has got to be like 12 years ago. Recorded.
Written might be even 13.
Wait, did I say written or recorded? I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Written, it's got to be at least 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Recorded probably like 10 or 11.
No, 13. 10 or 11 years ago. Tony,
because we recorded this.
But 10 or 11 years ago, Tony was in the band.
But we recorded this in Lorica. That was 2010.
So it's 11 years since we recorded it.
Like 10 and a half. Wait, it was wintertime, right?
I have no idea.
This is not important. I'm sorry. Sidetracking this.
Song's called Worse in a Better Way. My
ladies and gentlemen, the Stampede just committed total slaughter.
On my fingers.
Guys, thank you once again for performing on No Borders No Race.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We're going to take one more break, and we're going to start out with a band that Chris has chosen, a band that I've really become close with as well, Malice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. From their album, Timeless Rock, this is Romancer. From their self-titled debut album, that was Baby Metal with Gimme Chokehold. And I can't believe just how huge Baby Metal has become in this world, man. This has just been, like, out of all the bands that was going to become huge from Japan, Baby Metal wasn't going to...
When you have Rob Zombie coming to fight for you, that's fucking badass.
All the bands fighting for them. Like, dude. Alice Cooper, Rammstein fought for them. It was
So many people saw them as just like a niche band, like, and all of a sudden they just like, no.
Like, they were like, fuck you.
All right, so guys, thank you so much for joining me here on this special episode of No Borders Erased, celebrating 15 years at 275 episodes. So I gotta ask, Chris, Manny, what's going to be new with the Stampede?
We're all gonna figure that out together.
We're gonna leave
in a post-COVID world.
We're trying to figure out these same questions. I mean, to be completely honest, the future of like live music has just been up in the air. You know, the idea of playing shows, booking shows
won't be like it was.
It's an entire different world.
For a while. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think our next goal is going to be to record and release an album. I mean, realistically, like the easiest thing to do as a unit of people who all took the pandemic seriously and also who all trust science, but also have no place to play because all the small venues are closed. We have a bunch of material. We have some material that we've slowly, sadly worked on during the pandemic. Ideally, recording new songs would be the
next. It's been 2 years. It's
crazy too because there's even songs that you haven't recorded yet officially. Like you just played "Worse in a Better Way." You have not recorded "Drift Away" or "K-Hole."
Yeah,
not my own.
"K-Hole." Not my own is one of the oldest songs that exists that has no recording.
I have one. Coffee House recording.
I could probably count on one hand the number of people that know that song.
No, we'll count them on one hand. Evan. I count that on one hand.
Absolutely.
So there's a few songs on that. There's a song called "Edge of Town," which it's become one of our better live songs, but really it's grown with the addition of, you know, Tony on bass. I mean, we couldn't have written that song without Tony, but having keys, that song's grown, and that's one of the songs that it's cool to be like, oh, we have a B-side. This is a song that we played all the time live, but never got that one's never been recorded in any sort of professional setting. "Edge of Town," we did not record in your basement. "Edge of Town" has never been recorded.
You're not thinking of song one, right?
That's not true.
Well, I mean,
technically speaking,
I'm talking about demo, first album, second album.
Yeah,
I'm talking about release recordings. We've recorded every song we've ever made in some context. I'm talking about some recordings that have been released to the public. "Edge of Town" is one of our best songs, in my opinion. That's never been release to the public, and that's always one that I think would make a sick release for a next gen Stampede recording.
I might be partial to this because I've been listening to it incessantly throughout the pandemic, trying to learn how to be an audio engineer but follow the king.
Our whole entire next release should be based on the fact that we wrote that song. we wrote a song. And it's this epic live performance. And Chris has these really good recordings from his basement. And that's like, we should build... I believe we should build an entire album around that.
We haven't played that many times, have we?
Are you talking maybe like a concept album?
Well, so the song in itself is like a 10-minute journey. It's called "Fall of the King and the Rise of a New Era," which was a joke in its own right.
Rise of a New Era in parentheses.
But I wanted to call the song that because of King Gizzard. I was like, this song reminds me of King Gizzard. So like, "Fall of the King." I was like, fuck them. If they can do it, we can do it too. We can do anything. But it just turned into this very epic thing.
And I will be very sad if I die and that song doesn't get released to the public. Like that song deserves to be released.
Then you need to drive very slowly and carefully.
Taxi?
I will say that's a great example though right there where it's just like, because we all seem to kind of like, sometimes like a couple of members of the group will gravitate to a band at a given time. Sometimes it lines up, sometimes it doesn't. But now that it's like to the point where it's five people, it's like that was all, that's where your head was at, nowhere near where my head was at. So the two of us come back together to try and make something out of it, it goes in a
totally different direction. You and me were alone when we wrote the whole second part of that song, where it's like drops, and it's like a waltz. We turned it into a waltz, and completely different way to go with a tune, but it's like, that's why that song, in my opinion, is one of the coolest things we've done in quite some time.
And Blue, what have you got? I'm sorry.
Went off on a tear.
How many bugs have you silenced tonight, Blue?
I'm still working on trying to kill the whole swamp next to my house. Working on it.
Yes.
That could be a good album.
Yeah.
Killing the swarm.
Killing the swamp and the swarm. I'm just living every day like, I don't know, it's my last, I guess. it's just craziness, having the two kids and then going to work and killing myself and wishing I could come back onto the show a lot more often, but it's just one of those things that it's like, I had to pry myself away and be like, wifey, you take care of the kids tonight. She's like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? Why the fuck do I gotta take care of the kids?
I appreciate you taking time out to actually be on this show, believe me. Like I said, you were the backbone of the original No Borders No Race. You gave me the confidence to go on the radio every single week, man. Like, you were awesome.
Just grab you from the back and just scruff you and push you towards the mic.
Get over here!
The best part about that is the unintended consequences, because then likewise, I never would have been on radio if it wasn't for you. And I can remember the first time going into WMWM being like, if I didn't know Evan, I would not be anywhere fucking near this. This is awesome as shit.
Yeah, so it was like down in the basement, very last room of the Ellison Campus Center.
Hell yeah. It was a fun place to go visit. It, for the first time in my life, I felt like cool and special.
Professional?
Like, because I wasn't a part of Anime Club. I didn't like know you guys. I mean, I knew this journey, motherfucker. But I didn't know Hogan. I didn't know you as well as I knew him. But being able to like come in and be like, "There's a special music guest." Like that was the first time in my life where I was like, "This is the coolest feeling I've ever had in my life." Be like, I somehow became called a special music guest. Like, that's fucking badass.
You were our first.
That's cool. But also, I'm sorry, you missed out because Anime Club was the shit.
I missed out in the physical and experientials.
Dude, I just remember why.
I did miss out because I learned about a bunch of anime.
I just walking into the fucking stadium seating classrooms with the fucking projector and being like, they actually let you use this shit for this purpose. This is bad as hell. And then they were like, oh, we can't let you use this room anymore. We got to move you guys to like the business class. And we're like, oh, that kind of sucks. And then you wait and you get in there and you're like, wait a minute.
This is better.
These chairs are comfier. That screen looks way bigger because I'm a lot closer to it. This is the shit right here.
Real anime club.
Which one was the line where Meyer Hall, top floor, like the movie screen size screen?
Yeah, that was the first one we were in. It was like, again, it was like a dozen of us. Mm-hmm. And it was like this, so we're all like spread out. Everybody's got plenty of room. How far back up in the seat do you want to go? Where the fuck are you? It's like a movie theater you have to yourself. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for being here on this episode of No Borders, No Race.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, man, anytime. As I've always told all of my guests, and especially with you guys, there's always a seat at the table for you here.
Hell yeah.
So
we're going to have to come back.
Yeah, we'll have to get some new
sooner
shit
than, like, what, 12 years?
Hopefully it's not that long.
No, I mean, not that long. Ideally, next time we should get a few more members. I mean, there's five members now. We like to be very selfish.
Wait. Did we not trim the fat? I thought we covered that at the beginning.
Yeah, but we can bring it back. The band is ours. We can do it wherever we want.
All right, get the fat, staple it back onto the band.
We're stapling the fat back on the band. Mm-hmm. We're lost without them. Don't let them hear. Or we talked about trimming the fat. Also, it's what, 10:35? Happy birthday to my beautiful goddamn wife.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Emma.
I didn't wish her happy birthday before. I'm going to be in the doghouse. When she hears that I waited so long.
It'll be fine. She's a good woman.
As opposed to where you normally live?
She knows how to handle a 35-year-old child. Hats off to her.
Yeah. So, the final song we're playing, of course, is the band that started it all for all of us, The Pillows. This is a song that played as, like, the next episode, part of Fooly Cooly, as well as the last episode of Fooly Cooly.
The best.
This is one of the, yeah, absolutely, one of the best songs from Happy Bivouac.
One of my all-time favorite songs ever in life.
That album means so much to me.
This is Last Dinosaur. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck.
Blue on it.
Oh, man.
And Chris.
Reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps. This is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo, from the Electric Sisterhood, and your host
for the No Borders, No Race podcast. Each episode, we play the best, brightest, and hottest acts from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. Every song spun is but a mere taste of what you can expect of the artists heard, so if you truly loved what hit your eardrums, please be sure to support these musicians and buy their albums, EPs, and singles. Places like Amazon.com, CD Japan, Yes Asia, Bandcamp, iTunes, and even your local record store are great places to plop down some sweet moolah to let those artists know that they're doing a heck of a good job with their melodies. The more an artist gets support from listeners, the better the chance that they'll come to a venue nearest you to play the sounds that won your heart. This message is brought to you by the Boston Bastard Brigade, reminding you all to support your local, national, and international artists any way you can.